This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
Yes, welcome to Anatomy of a Movie with a little happy tune celebrating the joyous return of the one, the only, Alexa Caviello.
Yes, I'm back.
Happy Cappy, happier.
Happier
and cappier than ever. Happier because you were on the snow-capped mountains of Colorado.
Yes, I was. I really like these tunes, by the way. They're very festive.
This is from Ryan in the Booth. This is his band.
Oh, and, nice,
he's
Ryan.
He's just trying to pay himself royalties, so it works out really well.
Can I be your background dancer?
Now, for those not familiar, this is Retro Anatomy of a Movie, and what we like to do here is take one of those movies that we've always heard about, but for whatever reason we've never seen.
Like bucket list films.
Yeah, just like, oh yeah, I know that that's good, or I've heard that that's good, but just haven't gotten to it. It's not, I've actively avoided this film my whole life. I have a few of those. Just haven't seen it. So we're going to give our thoughts on that. And today we'll be talking about Stripes, featuring Bill Murray, Harold Ramis,
yep,
and 20 other people that I had no idea about. There's Sean Young is in this movie.
John Candy.
Yep. Very young Timothy Busfield. John Larroquette with black hair.
Paxton.
Yes.
Is in it as an unnamed soldier.
Yes, unnamed soldier, and he Timothy Busfield, best known for 30-something, he's gone on to direct. He was on The West Wing. He is like cannon mortar guy or something. He's the guy who, you know, is like, I don't think I should shoot this, and John Larroquette tells him you have to shoot.
Yep.
So he's that guy. And these were basically the movies that introduced them. But we get all sorts of people in this movie that I just didn't know were there. Judge Reinhold is in this movie a lot, which it's fascinating because this is 1981 and he's in the Army. And about 4 years later, he's in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He's got a beautiful baby. And, you know, like a year after that, he's in Beverly Hills Cop. So, you know, he's got one of those baby faces, even to this day, really. I mean, he's not going to play high school, but you still see him and you go, yeah, I can imagine him body switching with Fred Savage.
Also, the 80s was an era where they had a lot of older people playing high school. I mean, let's talk Breakfast Club for a second.
We can talk Breakfast Club. You can talk.
Those kids were. Not kids.
You can bring it over to television and mm-hmm. Beverly Hills 90210, where I believe Ian Ziering was 32, and it sounds like a joke. I don't think it is, though. Yep. I think he was 32 when it started. So you get a lot of that. But I want to start where we always do, which is what you thought this movie was about and how it translated into what it was actually about.
Well, you came at me with Stripes. You're like, Stripes? I was like, what is this movie? I've never even heard of it. I'd never even heard of Stripes, so...
It's funny because we ended up with Stripes. Let me just give a sidebar here. It's because I wanted to find a military movie.
Yes, because we wanted to talk about 1917 as well, because we like to keep it current, and we like to, talk about current films and relate them to the previous films that we've watched, but... this one I had never heard of before, and I'm a big fan of Bill Murray.
Sure.
And this was one of his first big movies, right?
Yeah, because Caddyshack is not really his movie. He's very memorable in it, but this is really the first starring Bill Murray vehicle, I think. And it's a movie that, I don't know how I never saw it. It's got half of the Ghostbusters in it, and yet I still had never seen it. You know?
And the director of it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Ivan Reitman. Yeah. So I don't know how it happened. But so what did you think it was about when I said, hey, you want to watch Stripes? So this was like a week ago. You've heard of this movie.
I mean, like, again, I hadn't heard of it. I didn't even look it up when you told me about it. You're just like, Stripes? And I was like, is it a military film? Does it look decent?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it the opposite of 1917? Yes. Yes, it is.
Absolutely, yeah. The opposite. But yeah, I didn't really know anything else about it other than the fact that it existed. So that's pretty lame, but honestly, I'm glad that I know it existed now. I enjoyed it. Not without its issues, though.
Yes. We'll get into that. I think you run into that a lot, especially with comedies from the 80s.
Yes.
You know, there's sometimes the issues are on the surface, and sometimes they're a little deeper. You look at a film like 16 Candles, and you have the character Long Duk Dong now, which it was apparently very funny in the 80s. My wife is Chinese American, and her dad and you know, they used to always watch it, and they would laugh at that.
Yep.
But then when my wife was a little bit older, she was like, oh, they were making fun of us. That's not cool.
They were.
Yeah, and
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide. So we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You know, look, that movie still plays on TBS somewhat regularly. So, I don't know. I don't know what's right. I don't know what's wrong. I don't know what people are accepting of and what they aren't. But a lot of times you watch a movie and you go, ooh, yeah. Because Flobo and I did Annie Hall last week. And, you know, that a lot of that's just dialogue and stuff. There were just a few times.
Wait. You did it, Annie Hall?
Yeah, I hadn't seen it.
What?
I'd seen like 5 minutes of it 20 years ago.
Yeah. What?
I've seen a lot of Woody Allen
Annie
movies, just hadn't
Hall.
Seen that one.
Oh, wow. Anyway,
all right, Italian girl who hasn't seen Goodfellas. Okay. Let's settle down for a minute.
Okay.
But
this
still,
is not a show
still,
to attack one another.
Still hasn't seen Goodfellas.
On the movies we haven't
watched.
This is why we are here.
This is why we're here. To better ourselves and hopefully in an entertaining way.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to Stripes. I knew he was in the military. I didn't know for sure it was set in the present day. I thought it could have been like a, you know, a Vietnam farce, which I don't think they were making in 1981. But I think it was pretty close to what I expected. Bill Murray is Bill Murray in the Army.
Yeah.
And, you know, Harold Ramis is along for the ride.
Right.
And, of course, John Candy's there. The beauty of it is you have multiple cast members from SCTV in this, which the aforementioned Harold Ramis and John Candy, but also Joe Flaherty as one of the border crossing guys in the booth. So I thought that maybe we were going to get everybody, but no Catherine O'Hara in this movie, a.k.a. Mom from Home Alone. So we have, and there were just so many faces in it. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course that person's in this movie because everybody's friends. I mean, you know, Bill Murray also started in Second City, so you know, it made sense.
It was originally supposed to be Cheech and Chong.
I mean, that would have made sense, wouldn't it?
That would have.
Yeah. See, that's a little fact that I didn't know. What other facts did you dig
up?
We
always
like
plenty.
We always like to
dig
up the history.
Research.
So yeah, we'll talk about our personal thoughts about it, but it's nice to dive into some of the facts behind the film and how it was received at the time. But let's get some of these interesting facts. I always enjoy these.
First, I wanted to point out the tagline of the film: "The story of a man who wanted to keep the world safe for democracy." .. and meet girls.
So, look,
that's pretty appropriate for what the film is about.
Yeah, I would probably switch those because he wanted to meet girls.
I mean,
and
yes.
Then second from that is like, well, I guess in order to do that, I will have to maintain democracy. And yes, this is a poster that I've seen many times that Ryan was showing. For those watching on YouTube, if you're not watching on YouTube and you're listening to the audio version, you can always find our shows on YouTube. You can just look up Anatomy of a Movie on Popcorn Talk. But you could also just Google Stripes poster, and it's probably going to be what comes up.
I was also not completely familiar with the amount of projects that the director, Ivan Reitman, had done. First, he started out with Meatballs, which I haven't seen. I don't know if you've seen.
That, you know what? That would I would say that's the first big Bill Murray movie.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking of that when I spoke. Yeah. I have seen that. And
then, of course, Stripes was the second one, and then Ghostbusters. I already knew about Ghostbusters.
I would
one
hope.
And two. Yeah. Okay. Kindergarten Cop was the one that I got super excited about because I love that movie, and I did not realize that Ivan Reitman directed it.
Yeah. Oh, no. And he's on as a producer in a lot of movies, including
Animal House, Space Jam.
Yeah.
Space Jam. Private Parts and
Howard,
Up in the Air.
Yeah, Howard Stern's Private Parts. That's that film. And he's very much a producer on that. So, yeah. So, Ivan Reitman. And, of course, his son, Jason Reitman, has made a number of great films, including a Ghostbusters reboot that some people think we need, other people,
me.
Yeah. I'm blind to gender when it comes to the Ghostbusters reboot. I didn't need the female one. I also don't need this one. I don't need either Ghostbusters reboot. But will I see it? Yeah, probably. What am I going to do? Have a hunger strike about not seeing it? There were a couple of those facts. Anything else jump out at you, Alexa?
Well, yeah, let's talk about the Cheech and Chong. So, Ivan Reitman thought up the idea originally. He was like, oh, this would be perfect for Cheech and Chong. He pitched it to Paramount and they were like totally all for it. They greenlit it. Yeah. However, they wanted, Cheech and Chong wanted creative control over the project, and Reitman's like, I don't know, I really like this script.
Yeah.
So he pitched it instead to Columbia. And Columbia Pictures, and he attached, Harold Ramis first. And you knew all about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Harold Ramis, and then he was like, well, Ramis will definitely convince Bill Murray to do it. And
yeah, I think that'll always help, because people, even though Bill Murray was not a movie star at this point,
no,
he was very well known on Saturday Night Live. You know, this is, of course, back at the point when there were five channels. And if you're on one of the shows on one of the five channels on television, everyone knows who you are. But look, Bill Murray was very beloved on SNL, even though he wasn't an original cast member. So I think getting him in your movie for what his rate would have been in 1981 was probably wasn't the asking price that he got a few years later, which, of course, one day if we ever were to talk about Ghostbusters, which we've seen, but he was not originally supposed to be in Ghostbusters. It was supposed to be John Belushi, and also Eddie Murphy was going to be in it at one point.
Really?
Yes. So that would have been a very different film.
That would have
been. It's a great film. So as we're talking about finances, Ryan in the booth has looked up a few things. It opened to $6 million, which in 1981, and it's probably, nothing to shake a stick at. And then its gross was $85,297,000. And I know the budget was $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
So that is considered a runaway success in 1981 dollars for a film. And
they also had the backing of the military, too.
Yeah. I think that shows a little bit in the movie.
The military actually really liked the script, which I was a little confused about. I mean, because they poke fun at the military a lot.
Sure.
Of course. But then there's also questionable things in the film, just in general. But I mean, Bill Murray's speech near the end, where he's amping up his cohorts. Was very, very American. And I thought it was a great speech, and maybe that's the thing that really, really did it.
Yeah.
Also, it definitely encouraged young, lost men, not just like watching this, but I'm sure the commercials that they play all the time.
They had the actual commercials.
They did.
Yeah.
So this is a story that's been told, I'm sure, multiple times by, cadets in the making, where they're like, well, I was lost and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And then I saw this commercial and I had a sense of purpose.
I left my cab in the middle of the Verrazano Narrows Bridge. And I thought he was going to jump at that point.
It seemed like
that scene ended abruptly.
I did too.
I was just, because he throws his keys in and I'm like, okay, is he going to jump?
I did too.
And I feel like that must have been where that scene went.
I thought he was going to jump out the window after he threw the basketball out.
Right.
I thought there was multiple times where
he was going to attempt suicide. Which, maybe in 1991 they're like, you know what? It's probably not as funny a movie if he tries to kill himself multiple times. So I don't know.
I also wasn't prepared for the gratuitous nudity. I don't know.
Well,
you're
just not as familiar with comedies from the 80s.
Fine.
I think we get gratuitous nudity within the first 5 minutes because his girlfriend's stepping out of the shower.
Just topless. And I was like, okay.
She's stepping out of the shower. Mm-hmm. If she's in the shower, and she sticks her head out, maybe. But it's like, oh, hey, Bill Murray, how are you? I'm about to leave you, but, get one last look.
Then
Bill.
There was the shower scene with the loofah.
Well, that was what
loofah
I was
going to comment, which apparently was improvised.
John Larroquette and very funny, best known for Night Court, and he's done a number of movies since. But I thought that that was what I was going to say earlier. It makes people in the military look somewhat questionable, but it doesn't make the military as a whole look bad. I'm sure that's a conscious decision, and that's why the military cooperated.
Yeah, perhaps it did. Even it put made up them some of the, look
some
bad.
Of that $10 million budget. You know?
It made them like the main characters look bad. It made they were kind of like the outcasts of the army. So yeah, I guess it made a little bit more
even
sense.
Even
Hulka,
you understand, like, okay, he's a drill instructor. You know, this is who he is. We've seen drill instructors. I mean, this is years before Full Metal Jacket. When you get Arlie
Ermey.
Even
he was a little more forgiving than I wanted him to be. I wanted
Hulka in this movie?
Yeah. I thought that he like let a lot of things slide that Bill Murray was saying. I was like, why is he not punishing him?
It was only like 50 push-ups a couple of times.
I know.
Now we're going to run 10 miles. There were a few of those things. Yeah. So let's see. There are a few things that we should really talk about. I mean, I think we've touched on it, and I think we'll keep dancing around it if we don't dive in. So what did you find to be most problematic? You said there's the gratuitous nudity, which, of course, very easy to edit out for television, you know, because I'm sure it played on
I didn't really have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with it if it's used properly, if it's necessary. And I just felt like it was gratuitous.
Yeah, in a movie like Porky's, it's really about the nudity and it's about seeing it, and that's more of a sex romp. This military story,
it
was definitely
really
thrown in. But you have to remember, 1981, it wasn't as easy to see nudity, you know?
They just kind of plan it in movies, you know?
Well, it's like, if I'm spending money to go out to the theater, I better see some boobies. Come on.
Otherwise, I feel like this movie would have been, I mean, I think it's rated R, right?
For the
nudity.
I think so.
And the drugs and the cursing, a lot of cursing in it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think it could have been a PG-13 film and probably would have been really good for some teenagers to watch. They would have probably thought it was hilarious. A lot of the humor in it was
Ryan's
really funny.
Confirming that it's R. And the thing to keep in mind with movie ratings is that PG-13 didn't exist until about 1984, 1985. So you had PG or R. So a lot of times you'd had to jump right to R. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes your PG movies were a little bit more violent than you expected them to be. So that's why PG-13 came about. Specifically, Dune and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom were the first two that I remember. And you can kind of see it in Indiana Jones, the Temple of Doom versus Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's just a little bit more graphic. It's a little bit more violent. And it's like, yeah, let's create a new rating for Indy. So, yeah. And look, like I said, very easy to edit for television or, you know, markets where maybe they don't want to have the gratuitous nudity. But I think that, yeah, I mean, look, R-rated comedies were a thing for a very long time. I mean, mm-hmm. the '80s was I referenced 16 Candles. Unless I'm mistaken, and Ryan, you can look it up if you don't mind, because I'm still having my internet issues. I think 16 Candles is rated R, because there is a little bit of nudity in it. And not
is it
a lot.
Really?
Yeah. And then, you know, maybe brush over the acquaintance rape
is
in that
Breakfast
film.
Club rated?
Breakfast Club, I don't think should be because
G?
It's just language. No. It could be PG, yeah.
PG, okay.
Yeah, so Breakfast Club and 16 Candles. Now these are all movies we're wondering what the ratings are. But
yeah.
This is a perfect example of an R-rated comedy. It didn't need to be, though.
No.
Like, really, none of the nudity really makes sense. You know, I mean, it's like scene
and the whole whatchamacallit scene where they're mud wrestling scene.
Well, that was not rated R, and I will have to say that was entirely necessary.
Of course, all the dudes are like, yeah.
No, I just thought it was very funny to
it was
watch
out of the blue and random and very long scene.
When they didn't go to a strip club, they went mud wrestling.
I know.
And look, watching John Candy mud wrestle is probably
he was very uncomfortable filming that.
I did not read that, but that makes sense.
He looked it, though.
I will say that that's probably the biggest regret about not seeing this film sooner is that I had never seen
John Candy mud
I had never
wrestling
seen John Candy mud wrestling. And Ryan's confirming, actually, 16 Candles was PG.
Okay,
so, yeah, so that makes sense. I think the John Hughes movies might not have been rated R, but, you know, I've referenced a few. I mean, Porky's always comes to mind, and Revenge of the Nerds I know is rated R because there's a lot more nudity in it, you know? I mean, it's like sometimes you have these films, and we have, for those on YouTube, we have a delightful photo of mud wrestling John Candy.
John Candy.
So I was wondering your thoughts on the two characters of the MPs, the military police, that end up becoming Bill Murray and Harold Ramis's girlfriends.
Yes.
Yeah. I did not feel like they were strong 2020 women characters.
They were not. Yeah. And that's something I definitely wanted to talk about on this show. It's like, if you're going to have the gratuitous nudity and you're going to just completely just sexualize women as just sex objects, the whole time really is what was happening. And you're going to have two named female characters that are the girlfriends, the love interests of the guys.
Yeah, I mean, they probably
the
have like the fourth most amount of dialogue in the movie. You
right.
know, they're major characters.
And not to tie in White Christmas to this, but it
favorite.
Was basically that. They just acted as pawns.
They didn't have a duet.
They did not sing. No. They barely had personalities. They just existed to be the girlfriends and get them out of trouble.
How you can usually...
I didn't even understand why they liked these guys in the first place.
They liked them instantly.
Instantly.
And like out of everybody in the lines of all the places that they're going, really, Harold Ramis? Maybe Bill Murray. Maybe Bill Murray. But
Bill
he's 26 and losing his hair.
Bill Murray has got a little bit of game.
Yeah, that's true.
A little bit of game in terms of he's got the gift of gab. But other than that, he's not a super attractive guy, in my opinion.
Bill Murray.
Yes.
No. He makes up for it. You know,
right.
I've always modeled myself after Bill Murray. Not an attractive guy, but when you get to know me, I go from like a 4 to a 4.5, you know? And Bill Murray starts at like a 6, and all of a sudden you talk to him, he's like an 8. I don't know
right,
how it
right,
works.
Yeah.
You know, we
but
should.
People just have charm.
Yeah.
He's one of those people.
Us sub-handsome guys, we all strive to be Bill Murray, but, you know, only Bill Murray can be Bill Murray. The reason why I feel like it jumped out sort of as some poor character development, you could take any of their lines of dialogue and switch them between them. You know what I mean?
Yes.
There's nothing unique about either of them.
Nope.
They are basically girl number one and girl number two. And
yep.
I know that they are named. I actually don't have their names in front of me. Bad note taking, partial internet.
PJ Souls played Stella Hansen and Sean Young played Louise Cooper.
Right. So Sean Young, I know because she's Sean Young.
Yeah.
And the other actress, I don't think I'd seen any other.
She was
time.
Married to Dennis Quaid, and they almost put him in the film.
Almost put Dennis Quaid in the
yes.
film? Well, that would have been a different film
it would
entirely.
Have.
I don't know how much
and
he would have
And Sean Young was just basically cast on her looks alone. Like, she didn't even come in and read. So that'll give you a good indication.
Let's not pretend that doesn't happen in 2020, by the way.
It is true.
But maybe it was a little bit more common.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So I think that you have some of those issues. I don't think. Look, I've referenced other R-rated comedies. I've referenced Revenge of the Nerds and 16 Candles. Both have very egregious treatment of women. Essentially, there's date rape in both of them, and it's played off as very funny. I don't feel like there's anything on that level in this. You know, there's nothing that you're like, oh, this is super uncomfortable. This is just like, all right, I don't know why they like them. And right away, Bill Murray's got her up on the stove,
yep.
and he's using the ice cream
yep.
scooper all off camera, which,
yeah,
by the way, makes it funnier, because if you saw him doing anything, you'd be like, well, that's just weird.
Yep.
So I don't know. I feel like, you know, and again, as a man, I might have a different perspective. Did you feel that it was terrible? Did you feel that it was just dated? Or do you feel like in 1981, it still would have been like problematic even then?
I don't think in 1981 it would be problematic. I think that it just shows how far we've progressed and
yeah.
how we continue to need to progress. But I don't think it was in 1981 they would have cared. But nowadays you watch it and as a female, and even you were watching, you were just a little disappointed.
I have a daughter, you
know?
The two comedies that I referenced, I haven't seen them in a long time. You know, I don't know how I would feel watching either of those. You know,
these are supposed to be strong military women.
Yeah,
and
military police, by the way.
Yes,
yeah.
And they just seem to take. They're like, oh, they're charming, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Oh, we're gonna go and look at what's his name's house or whatever.
The
for
general
a while.
Or whatever.
Oh, you guys are just gonna come with us? Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, they just run into the house. yeah, exactly.
Let's just continue to save you guys from all your problems and what you do to yourselves. So we're just gonna save you. It's fine. By the way,
that's
bad.
Alexa's audition tape for Stripes 2020, the reboot. Jason Reitman will
actually...
I wanted
to see them kick ass. And I mean, I guess they
just
did.
Just once.
Near the end, they teamed up with the guys and they got the, you know, platoon out of trouble in Czechoslovakia. Yeah. But it was just like, come on, give them a personality, please.
Earlier when we were talking, I referenced Full Metal Jacket, and I don't know if you've ever seen that, but it's I've always looked at that as two different movies. There's the boot camp half of the movie, which is light and sort of fun, sort of to an extent. And then there's the second half. There's a very abrupt moment that switches to the second half. And you're dealing with the horrors of war, and it's like, oh yeah, this is a totally different movie. This didn't quite have that abrupt of a moment, but there's this sort of like last half hour, basically the third act, that they go off to Italy, and they've got this basically this fancy RV to protect that's sort of like a military RV.
I know. It went off track a few times, this film.
I feel like it went off the rails entirely, in all honesty. Because then you know, John Larroquette, they wander across a border into what is in 1981 Soviet territory, mm-hmm. not the Czech Republic, it's Czechoslovakia. Those are Soviet military uniforms that you see at the checkpoint. I guess when you've got Joe Flaherty there, it's not going to be as hard.
They filmed all that, by the way. I'm sorry.
No, please.
They filmed all of that in Louisville, Kentucky. Yes.
I always thought Kentucky looked like Czechoslovakia.
In a closed Chappie's distillery owned by Jim Beam in Clermont.
Wow. Now, see, those are the kind of facts that I did not have.
It's pretty cool. So they shot most of it in California, and then all those scenes they were shot in Kentucky, which looks so much like Czechoslovakia.
Yeah. Well, now we know. And by the way, I've been to the Czech Republic, but not Kentucky. But I guess I've technically been to Kentucky because it's across the river from Cincinnati. But anyway, it's neither here nor there. If you're going to have a vacation destination, which one should you pick? That's not for me to decide. You answer your own questions out there in the audience. So I think that it just goes from it just changes so abruptly.
Yeah.
And it's like it's gone from... okay, not really believable comedy, but grounded in reality, to just outright farce in
outright
the third act.
Outright ridiculous.
It's just preposterous.
Yes.
It's just all of it. Well, we're going to steal this and drive to Germany. Not that you can't drive to Germany from Italy. That part's fine.
Right.
But it's like, oh, that's how they're going to get there. And they've got this military vehicle. And
which came out of nowhere. Also,
yeah.
I was like, what is this thing? And why?
They're
okay,
we're going to desert for the weekend so that we can go see our ladies.
Mm.
And... you know, I mean, you get a lot of moments of Bill Murray being Bill Murray. He's very charming when he's tipping people.
He honestly saved the film. It's Bill Murray saved the movie.
I mean, otherwise, put Dennis Quaid in that role? I don't think we'd be talking about it today.
No, Dennis Quaid was supposed to be the other guy.
He was supposed to be
Harold Ramis.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing. Put Harold Ramis in Bill Murray's role. Harold Ramis is great, but, you know, there's only Bill Murray. Maybe John Belushi, you could have gotten away with it.
Maybe.
You know, maybe 1981 Chevy Chase, you know, but even at that point, he looked like he was 40, so probably not. I think I was just a little bit more disappointed that that's where it went. I felt like I was good after they finished basic training, and they were, and you know, the general is like, yeah, these are my kind of guys, you know, we're gonna go to Italy. And then it would have just been like, you know, over the credits they're like, you know, partying, I don't know, mud wrestling in Germany, I mean, sorry, in Italy or something. So it just really, the whole thing really fell flat, and I'm just like, I actually thought, well, this is just stupid.
Yep. At the end of it, you just sort of are like, well, that was
yeah.
that
and
was
I
a
think
movie.
The first hour, it got me focused.
And I was laughing a lot at Bill Murray being Bill Murray, down and out, this character that's, you know, kind of a loser and everything's going wrong for him. And then he decides, oh, I'm going to, you know, join the military and bring my friend along, who's also miserable in his job. And it had a lot of promise.
Yeah.
It really did. It started out really well. And then from the point where they got to the military, which I thought they were going to do more with, and they didn't, it just started declining.
Yeah.
I think the start of the decline was the mud wrestling scene, to be honest. It was for me.
You were right. It was very long.
It was so long.
Yeah, it was a lot of mud
wrestling. A little bit uncomfortable for me because I was watching it with my roommate, who is an older woman. She's like in her 60s or whatever. She's cool. She's really cool. But then, I mean,
I thought you were going to say that she's retired from mud wrestling. No, there's trophies everywhere.
No, yeah. She's cool. But I was still like, oh, this is kind of like watching it with my,
You know, we didn't mention it earlier, but let's not brush past the fact that when John Candy is trying to beat three women, one of his tactics is to take off their clothes.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that that's why the police arrive, basically. Yes. So, I have to admit to being a little bit disappointed. I was watching by myself.
Oh, okay.
So that part was all right. I think my wife came down after that part, and she was like, what are you watching? I'm like, I'm watching Stripes. And she's like, whatever. So, I think that the third act definitely leaves something to be desired.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad I've seen it. I think that there was a lot of fun along the way. And, you know, one of the things that Flobo and I talked about last week as being from New York, when you see New York from the late 70s, early 80s, it's always nice to just be like, yeah, that's the same place that people bring their families to now. Yeah, Manhattan is like this, like Disneyland in the, you know, of the Northeast. And at that point, you were like, oh, no, we're not going to the city. I grew up, my parents were like, we're not going to the city. Are you crazy? No. Oh, I'd like to see this thing at the museum. It's like, nah. Maybe if it comes to the museum in Albany in upstate New York, maybe then we'll see it. But anyway, so I think there's a lot of that interesting sort of thing in there. But one of the things that we always like to look at when we talk about a film like this is, did it live up to the hype as being this, like, this great comedy in Bill Murray's?
Is it considered one of the best comedies that Bill Murray has done?
I think it's considered, you know, I think Meatballs is probably, believe it or not, more juvenile. You'll have to take my word for it. It's certainly, it's a summer camp. Mm-hmm. It's much more juvenile than this. But I think that this is really the first, like, lead, you know? I mean, I think this is his movie, and you can argue whether or not Meatballs is really his movie. So I think that this is seen as the first movie that's starring Bill Murray, you know? It's certainly, like, you know, we had that movie poster before. That's his face there, and mm-hmm. there's nobody else on it, and yet there's, like, 20 actors that, well, at least you recognize now.
Right.
So what do you think? Do you think it holds up in any sense? I'll ask you sort of broad picture first.
Like, if it were released today, I think people would have a lot of issues with it. A lot.
I think the MP characters would be in it, but I think they would be very different.
Yeah.
I think that they would probably have a fight scene or two, mm-hmm. and maybe they would actually have to rescue everyone, mm-hmm. including Bill Murray and Harold Ramis. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it – it was funny. There were lines of dialogue that full-on made me laugh out loud, and that's cool because I'm a curmudgeon. No, I'm just kidding. No.
Yeah, you're the old lady in the back of the cab.
No, like, I can appreciate good writing, and there was – in terms of jokes in there,
I mean, even in the overall, you know, approach to the third act wasn't great. There are still jokes that work in there. Yeah. I think dialogue wise, it is well written.
Fun.
Yeah, well written.
But I don't think it would hold up today.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say it wouldn't.
I have sort of a caveat. I think it holds up as a showcase for Bill Murray, mm-hmm. as a comedic actor.
Yes,
and you know, you can take any of his stuff, even at the very end where he's just being very Bill Murray, you know, at the end when they get back to the United States and he's like, he comes off the plane with the drink and like, that's the most Bill Murray, I think, moment in the whole movie where, you know, it's just like, okay, he's a cartoon character now. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, it reminded me of, believe it or not, Bruce Willis early in his career when he was on Moonlighting. I was like, oh, yeah, that's who he was supposed to be. He was supposed to be Bill Murray, also guy who went bald a little earlier than he would have liked. So you see the parallels. No, but, you know, I mean, because Bruce Willis, largely a comedic actor until Die Hard. And, you know, I mean, he'd been on Moonlighting for, I think, 3 or 4 seasons before Die Hard. And it just that's the moment where I'm like, oh, yeah, I get it now. Somebody saw that and was like, yeah, we need to put that on our show. Can we get something like that? So I think that there's some great Bill Murray stuff, especially when he's a cab driver.
Yeah.
I mean, early on, you know.
Like I said, it started out with a lot of promise. And I was really looking looking forward to him finding his sense of purpose. And, you know, there was that line in it where they're all introducing themselves and the cadets are all introducing themselves. And actually, there was a lot of laughs in that scene just based on who these guys were as characters.
Call me Psycho, not Francis.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just a lot of like little character stuff that was very funny.
Which was funny. And I wanted them to do more with that, but
lot of like funny one-offs, like the guy who's like, "Well, I figured I'd enlist so that I didn't get drafted."
Yes.
And everybody just kind of looks at him like that was funny.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, Bill Murray's character's like, "Well, I think we need a leader here, and you know, if Colonel dies or something happens to him, I think we need a leader, and I think I'm the perfect person for that." And I was like, "Okay, so basically, he doesn't have a purpose beforehand. He goes to the army, starts feeling like he has a purpose again. He starts leading these guys, and it kind of fell apart. It didn't really feel like he was leading them in any way. I mean, he was leading them to bad decisions, but it didn't really feel like he was a leader in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
No, I think that it's not fully realized. Like, you get hints of it, especially
when... I think that's what they wanted to do. Yeah. They just didn't do it.
Yeah, I think it's sort of like the way that everybody in the battalion fell asleep before the parade, and then they wake up an hour late and show up, and then they're able to show off. I think that might have happened with the writing staff. Like, they just all fell asleep, and then at some point they're like, well, we got to finish this damn movie.
What did Bill Murray's character learn at the end of the day?
Well, as it's mentioned in the
logline, how
to get girls.
How to get another girlfriend?
How to get girls and keep them around the world, you know? It's like, you can have your girl in the United States, and if she
goes to Germany... He didn't even warn his last girlfriend. He was like, oh, yeah, I just don't have one anymore. I don't really have a job either.
No, she wanted more.
Yeah.
And he's like, wow, this is it.
This is all I got.
Yeah. He's like, don't leave. I need you, you know? And, you know, what woman doesn't like to hear that, you know?
Right.
I mean, Alexa, if that were you walking out on Bill Murray and he said, I need you, you'd be like, all right, fine. I guess I'm going to have to stay, Bill Murray.
Not
even Bill Murray?
No, I completely empathize with his girlfriend at the time.
Yeah.
He's a train wreck.
And I think the scenes with he and Harold Ramis early. So I think we're essentially saying it doesn't really hold up, but not in the way where it's like unwatchable. I mean, it's fun most of it.
Yeah.
I mean, and even the silly last half hour, it's still like, okay, I guess. I do kind of wish I had seen this movie when I was younger, because the bar was very low for what I considered to be a good movie, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think I would have just been like, oh, this is all great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then it would have been like, you know, when it's shown on HBO in the middle of the day, they used to show R-rated movies in the afternoon. And I would have been like, well, you know, I mean, if I can get a shower scene here or there in the comfort of my own home, so be it. But, yeah, I don't think.
No, isn't this crazy? Reitman, Goldberg, and Ramis were involved in a detailed negotiation with the Department of Defense to make the film conducive to the recruiting needs of the military in exchange for subsidies in the form of free labor. They had military extras and location and equipment access.
But isn't it really like – isn't the takeaway from a military standpoint – are you a loser?
Are you a loser?
With nowhere
come
to go?
And join
come
us.
Come join the military.
Which you'll is find your sense of purpose and women.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that's kind of the rap for,
that is.
You know. And I've got great friends who serve, and some who still are. And there's still this narrative out there that it's like, it's a last resort, or, you know, you get stuck, you know. And it's just like, no, I mean, it's fun. Look, it's not all Top Gun. You know, and I think that I'm surprised when you said that the military signed off on it. I'm like, well, I guess it makes sense. But at the same time, I was a little surprised because there's some mixed messages.
There are.
You know.
A few.
Yeah. And, you know, what I meant to mention early on is, you know, this is extra timely right now because everyone's talking about Bill Murray.
Oh, I was going to say 1917, but yeah. Well,
no, because everyone's talking about Bill Murray because he was in that Super Bowl ad.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was going to tell somebody like, oh, you don't know much about Bill Murray, I would tell them to watch so many other movies before this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I would say Lost in Translation before this. Because,
interesting.
Well, because it's not as funny, but it's a better performance. It's a better movie beginning to end.
Yeah.
You know, and but if I'm going to go comedy, it's probably Groundhog Day, Ghostbusters. Oh. You know, it just depends on what you're looking for. Because,
yeah.
I mean, like 35 years I've enjoyed the Ghostbusters film. So, you know, that's – I don't know. But is there something that comes to mind for you as like, oh, this would be the best Bill Murray? Is it Ghostbusters for
you? I think so. And Groundhog Groundhog's Day is good too.
Yeah, right, exactly. And the interesting thing that I was reading about that I wanted to look up, there's an extended cut that came out about 15 years ago, and it has this entire subplot where they go AWOL and they stow away on a paratrooper mission, and they're captured by Spanish-speaking guerrillas. And by gorillas, I mean, you know, military agents, not the animal from the zoo. And they nearly get shot, but then because of the reference early in the film, I guess they mention Tito Puente. So he knows a lot of Spanish language music. So there's that moment, and that saves their lives because they bond over the music that he likes. And I can say that would not have helped the film.
No.
To have had that subplot in there.
No, would not.
I don't know where it was supposed to go. I guess it's released as an extended cut, so you can find where it is. But in any case, that's where we stand on this. Now, next week, hopefully our friend Rachel Goodman will be able to join us. And we'll be going from lighthearted romp to another lighthearted romp. It's a joke. Kramer versus Kramer, tied into Marriage Story. Join us next week. I believe we'll be back at 2 p.m. Pacific then. But until then, Alexa, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Alexa Cappy, C-A-P-P-Y.
Don't look for her on Twitter. She hates Twitter.
I'm there, but I don't use it.
Yeah, she doesn't. Yeah, I've tried to get her to, and she's just like, no, I refuse. So, look for Happy Cappy. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. And if you're watching this live and you want to check out some coverage on tonight's State of the Union address and the long-delayed Iowa caucus results, well, come check out the Trump Report tonight at 9 p.m. Pacific over on AfterBuzz TV. But that is all the time we have for this week. We will see you next week.
See you later.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.